I want to ask you a question as we get started here. Have you ever poured your heart into something or poured your heart into people, but then after a while have become discouraged by the fruit of your labors? Perhaps what you have been doing and have done, no one seemed to care. Or they didn't seem to be changed by all of your investment anyhow. Or, I don't know, perhaps you're just, we're a little older than we used to be, and you're just more tired. Your energy's not there. Maybe you're a little bit jaded through life, and you're like, what's the point? What's the point? Or I don't know if I can give all that, or I don't even know if it's worth the struggle. And maybe today someone's sitting here and you've even come to the spot in your life where because of all of those kinds of things, you doubt yourself. You doubt yourself, you doubt your value, you doubt what difference am I making, have I made, will I make, I don't even know anymore. Now, this is not a Mother's Day sermon, but I think that mothers probably can relate specifically to that, right? I mean, you can probably relate to knowing what it's like to pour yourself out and to sometimes feel underappreciated, underrecognized, tired, and wondering, am I doing any good, and what's my value? So I understand that. Moms, dads, workers, anybody, that can be an experience we all can feel. When we feel like we've given of ourselves in some area and we don't know that the payoff is reciprocated. It could be in your business. It could be in the ministry work you do. Could be in any part of your life where you feel that way. All across the table, most of us probably at some point have or do feel those emotions, right? And if so, here's a thought for you today. You are in good company. As we study the life of Jesus week by week, there are several stories in the life of Jesus that we are studying where Jesus faces some challenges, for example, and we're going to see this in the months to come. In the life of Jesus, we see times where he pours himself out, and he helps so many people in amazing ways, right? And the sad part is that it's not always appreciated or reciprocated. There's a story where we're not going to see this today, but we will down the road, where Jesus has done miracles. He's healed people. He's fed people. They've gathered around him. And then once they get to know him better and hear what he has to say, they left. There's a spot where Jesus looks at his closest disciples in discouragement and says to them, are you going to leave me too? We see stories where Jesus comes to a city that he's cared about and ministered to, and he just weeps over the city, weeps over the people, and says, I wanted to help you, but they did not respond to him, and they did not let him help the way he could have. And there are so many stories like that in the story of Jesus giving of himself. So yes, if you've ever been in that boat, you're not alone. Jesus felt that many times. So we're going to look at one story today, just one. And it's a story that hasn't happened yet. We're not trying to be really chronological in this series, but it's a story that's going to happen down the road a little ways, but I'm going to pull it to this day for this occasion. A story where Jesus is a little bit overwhelmed and maybe frustrated by the lack of response to his work. In fact, the story I'm going to tell you today, it only takes place in one book of the Bible. Matthew is the exclusive person to give us the story. It's found in Matthew chapter 11 and verse number 20. Let's read it together for a little bit. It's got a few layers to it. We're going to see Jesus expressing frustration, and then we're going to watch him do something. We're going to watch him pivot from those emotions and those feelings back to ministry, back to doing the work he was called to do. Let's begin with Matthew 11, verse 20. It says, then Jesus began to denounce the towns where so many of his miracles, he had done so many of his miracles, because they hadn't repented of their sins and turned to God. He had been all over the place in towns like Bethsaida, towns like Capernaum and other places, pouring himself out. And now he's looking at them saying, I haven't even helped you because you aren't listening. And he actually starts to kind of scold them here. He's not happy. Look what he has to say. He says in verse 21, what sorrow awaits you, Chorazin and Bethsaida? For if the miracles I did in you had been done in wicked Tyre and Sidon, their people would have repented of their sins long ago, clothing themselves in burlap and throwing ashes on their heads to show their remorse. He says, when he says what sorrow awaits you, I don't think he's trying to be mean or scoldy as much as he's trying to say, you don't get it, do you? It's sad. It's sad to see what you are missing out on because you're not responding to the work I'm doing in you. And he points out the cities of Tyre and Sidon. Those are famous cities. They were still around. In fact, Jesus has a little ministry that touches the cities of Tyre and Sidon, which is north of the land of Israel. But they were also well known in their ancient scriptures. The books of the prophets would talk about these wicked cities. They were very bad places with people really messed up. And Jesus says, those places that you look down on historically, if they had the opportunities that you've had, if someone did for them what I've done for you, they would have come around like you haven't. And so then Jesus adds this statement. He says, I tell you, Tyre and Sidon will be better off on judgment day than you. Wow. Like that place that you think is bad, they're gonna be better off when they answer to their creator than you because you had so much more opportunity and what have you done with it? Wow. He's kind of letting them have it. And then he turns to a more personal place. Verse 23. He says, and you, people of Capernaum, will you be honored in heaven? No. You will go down to the place of the dead. Now, Capernaum is interesting because Jesus had spent so much time in Capernaum. If you remember the story of Jesus, when he first started his ministry, he went to his home, boyhood hometown of Nazareth, and warned them, I'm going to do a lot of ministry up in Capernaum, and the day's going to come where you're going to be bothered and jealous of that. And you're going to send me to come and do that here, but I'm not going to. And he said some things that riled them up so bad, they almost killed him. And he says, you know, he made a prophecy that would come true later that he said, a prophet is without honor in his own hometown. And sure enough, later on, he would come back to his hometown and that would be fulfilled. But we probably won't ever look at that story. But Jesus would go to Capernaum instead. He stayed in a house that was there. He had a home base. He called many of his disciples from Capernaum, which is right off the Sea of Galilee. He did a lot of miracles. In fact, next Sunday's story is a really good one, I think. Next Sunday, we're going to tell a story that takes place in Capernaum. But Jesus is saying to these people who knew him, who are grateful for all that he did, or at least they liked what he did when it helped them, and he shows up like, oh, good, Jesus is here. And he says to them, he's kind of scolding them. They're like shocked at what he's saying. He says, you think you're better? You think you're the cat's meow? You think you're hot snot on a gold platter? That's the thing, you know? He says, listen, that's not how it is. He continues, he says, here's the problem. If the miracles I did for you had been done in wicked Sodom, it would still be here today. Now, Sodom and Gomorrah are cities like Tyre and Sidon that, again, in ancient history, we've heard them railed against by the prophets for being wicked places. And we don't know a lot about either place. We do have one personable story about Sodom that we know from Genesis, where it was a situation where it showed that they were a sexually violent place, where strangers or visitors showed up in a town and a mob showed up to literally sexually assault these visitors to their town, and if God had not intervened in a divine way, people would have been brutalized. It's a similar story in the book of Judges later. It happens in a city in Israel where visitors show up in a town and a mob comes to assault them, and they actually rape and kill a young woman. And because of that, a war breaks out. And in Sodom's case, God divinely judges that city, but it was a violent, dangerous place. And the people of Israel would know that story and might look down on the people there saying, oh, they were bad. And Jesus says, you think you're better than them? He says, if they had anyone do for them what I have been doing for you, they'd still be here today. And then Jesus says, of all places to Capernaum, he says, I tell you, even Sodom will be better off on judgment day than you. Like when you stand before your creator, you think you're gonna be better off because you're God's people and I'm here. The truth is you're gonna have a lot more to answer for than those people that you think were worse than you. Wow. Now, Jesus is not pulling any punches, and I want to get to that part, but let me make a quick side point for a few minutes here. It's a reminder to all of us that before you judge other people, remember that you and I have no idea what you would do in their situation or how they might react if they had your opportunities. It's so easy to judge other people by the thing that by different criteria. It's apples and oranges. We think a couple of easy examples are people with lots of money, and sometimes they don't handle their money in the smartest of ways, or they squander it. And I'm over here saying, oh, can you believe those people? I would never. How do I know if I would ever do? I've never had that kind of money. But, you know, because I don't have the opportunity, I can judge someone who does. But I don't know what I would do in that circumstance. Celebrities get a lot of grief because they're very public eye, and some of their celebrity status gives them opportunities and temptations that I will never face. And they make a mess of things, and we sit back and say, oh, can you believe they did that? It's so easy to judge when I will never be tempted. I will never have that opportunity, but I have an opinion about theirs. It's so easy to sit back and look at my circumstance and judge somebody else when I've never had to walk in their shoes. And the flip side of the coin is true also. Sometimes I've been given privilege and opportunity that someone has never had, and they struggle in ways I've never struggled. We're thinking about Mother's Day and parenting today. I remember when our kids were growing up, and I always taught our kids through their growing up years, let's to stand on their own. And sometimes they'd have drama with another child. That happens when kids are little. They happen more in middle school and sometimes in early high school. But there's drama. And sometimes there's problems. We were never the kind of parents, and they could tell you, to fly in and helicopter parent them. We always told them to advocate for themselves. We tried to stay out of things unless we absolutely had to. If they had trouble with a teacher at school, I grew up in a home where there was like, if I was in trouble at school, I was just in trouble at home. There was no side of the story that included my side of the story. You know, it was like, that's how it was, you know? So we weren't quite that way, but we were always like, okay, let's hear what's going on, but we're not gonna believe that our little Oswald and Oswalda are perfect either. So we're gonna listen, we're gonna care, but we're gonna try and coach them through it. We're gonna teach them to advocate for themselves. Anyhow, sometimes they had drama with friends, and we always wanted to listen and care, but we tried to tell them, okay, here's how you need to handle this in a healthy way. I'm sorry, but also here's how you should handle it. Because that's life. And I don't want to be the one who rescues and doesn't prepare them for adulthood. So unless we need to, because it's a bad situation, that's another story. But my son one time had a problem when he was little with a boy who was just mean, and we were talking about it, and he was upset. And we had to, you know, step in just a little bit, and we were supportive of him. But we said to him, before you get angry at this other kid, before you judge him, before you hate him, let's think about his life. He didn't have a father anywhere in his life. He didn't know his dad at all. He had a mom who was very much a mess, a big mess. His grandparents raised him, but they were older, and they honestly raised his mother, who was a mess. They were kind of their own religious version of a unhelpful situation. And he was just struggling with abandonment issues and all sorts of things. And I said to my son, no, there's no excuse for what he's done, none. But boy, I tell you, I would never want to have to walk. I wonder how I would be and you would be if we had to live it through his shoes. And I wonder how well things could have been for him if he had had your privilege and my privilege. So let's pray for him. We sat there and prayed at the table for that boy, because I want my kids not to look at someone through a lens that says, I'm comparing you to me when your circumstances are not my circumstances, right? And Jesus is saying to people, you think you're better, but you've been given so much more. And the people that you think are worse than you didn't have some of your opportunities and your privilege. And don't think for a second that makes you better in the sight of God. It just makes you more accountable. So Jesus is kind of letting everyone know how it is. Now, as we read that story, As we read that story, can you see the frustration that Jesus is feeling? Can you hear his voice as he's like, I am pouring into you and I am tired and no one's listening to me, right? Can you imagine how tired he must have been? All of the work. Can I get a testimony here? All of the work, the time, the miracles, the teaching, and these people still wouldn't believe. What do you do in a moment like that? What can we do when we're exasperated because we've poured ourselves out and it seems to be for naught? What do you do in a moment like that? What did Jesus do in this moment? Well, let's look at that together. Verse 25 says, at that time, Jesus prayed this prayer. Ooh. The first thing Jesus did in a moment of frustration with ministry and people is he vents about it. He does vent, okay, we heard that. Not the sinful way that I would. He did it in a good way because he's Jesus. But he immediately prays. Now, let's be real now. Sometimes when you and I are frustrated, prayer is the last thing on our mind, isn't it? Like prayer. Or even if it comes to mind, we're like, I don't want to pray. I want to be mad. You know, like frustrated, I want to pray. So prayer doesn't always our go-to, but Jesus prayed. And look at what Jesus prayed. He said, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, thank you. Remember those words, thank you. He says, thank you for hiding these things from those who think themselves wise and clever and for revealing them to the childlike. What things? The things he just said. The things he was just expressing of saying, look, you know, we sometimes look at ourselves through a faulty lens. We have our filters and we compare apples to oranges. And the truth is that while some people aren't responding to my message, others are hearing the message and they are receiving it. The child, like the ones who are humble enough and full of faith enough to hear what I am saying. Thank you, Father. And then he adds this statement. Yes, Father, it pleased you to do it this way. And what Jesus did in a moment of discouragement and maybe frustration is he prayed and he gave thanks to God. And I'm going to tell you something. It works. It works when we do that. Say, how do you know? Because I've learned, I'm going to confess to you, I have not always turned to God in prayer and giving thanks when I've been frustrated. You're like, what? But you certainly must mean before you were a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, you didn't do those things. But now you faithfully always think to pray and give thanks, right, Reverend? Right, Arlen? And the answer is, I think I'm better than I have been before, but in my 26 years of pastoring, there are many times when I got frustrated and I did not turn out of that mentally unhealthy space to prayer. Until the Holy Spirit knocks at my door and says, hey, why don't you pray about that? Or sometimes he sends somebody else to nudge me along. Michelle would occasionally say, maybe you should take a prayer walk. She's right. Blast. You know, I should go, because I like to walk whenever. So I've been put in my place here. So I'm going to take a walk because I am not healthy. And then I pray. And you know what? I always remember when I pray to do what Jesus did here. You know what Jesus did here? He prayed and he began by being thankful. That's a big Bible idea. And this will help all of us if we'll let it. A big Bible idea is that 20 years after Jesus' ministry was over, the Apostle Paul would write that we begin our time of prayer, we should do it by giving thanks. That 1,000 years before Jesus showed up, the psalmist once wrote that we should begin our communion with God by giving thanks. Jesus here is frustrated, is discouraged, but he prays and he gives thanks. And so I would go on these prayer walks and I would know this, and I would say, let me start by giving thanks, even though I'm frustrated. Okay. Please throw me a lifeline. Does anybody else know how hard it is to think of things to be thankful for when you're frustrated? When you're frustrated, frustration is like so front and center, isn't it? It's like all you can see is what frustrates you at the time. It's like, right here. And like, be thankful. You ever say, be thankful. What's there to be thankful for? Because we're frustrated. And so I would sit there and say, I need to give thanks, but I'm frustrated. So I would force myself to zoom out. Get out of the weeds, get the 30,000 foot view, and think of things I was thankful for as I'm on this walk that I was told to take because I needed it. And then I always start to remember, I'm thankful for this, I'm thankful for that. And usually once I get one going and I thank God for that and think about that, another one would come to mind and the dominoes would start to drop. And sometimes 10 or 15 minutes later, I came back to pray about the thing that I came to take a walk about. I came back to pray about the frustration after giving thanks. But every single time I've ever done that, by the time I've given thanks and I come back to my frustration, it's just different. It's not gone. The frustration is still there. It's still there, still a problem. But my perspective has changed. I'm more humble because I've looked at what God has done for me. I'm more grateful. And all of a sudden, the thing that was overwhelming right here is more manageable because I simply prayed and thanked God for the things he's done. It works every time. Try it if you're ever frustrated to go out there and pray and start by giving thanks for a little bit. It won't solve the problem, but it will definitely give us a better path forward. And Jesus does that here. And then when he finished praying, he then says something out loud. I don't know who he's talking to himself or to anyone who stands nearby, but he says these words, "My Father has entrusted everything to me." He says, no one truly knows the Son except the Father, and no one truly knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Jesus is like, you know what? Let me affirm out loud that I have been blessed, that God has entrusted something to me. You know what God had entrusted to him? The ministry that was frustrating him. Isn't that funny? What God had entrusted to him was the opportunity that was driving him crazy. He's like, you know, all of this I'm doing, I'm annoyed by all these things because I have the privilege of serving because God gave me that privilege. And he knows me. No one knows me like he knows me, and no one knows him like I know him. And he is thankful for the privilege God has given him. And he's praising the Lord. Jesus responded to the heaviness of his load in two ways. First, he gave thanks in prayer. And second, he changed his perspective and affirmed to himself of all the benefits that he had in his life. Can I just say this to you? That works for me today. That works for you today. If we could stop and do it. Let me give you a thought to take home with you today. Did you know that most of our stressing is because of our blessings? Right? Most of our stressing is because of our blessings. Think about that. Okay, it's Mother's Day. Let me pick on mothers for a minute, okay? When you're a mom and you have a new baby, 3 or 4 months old, we have some testimonies going on here. With 3 or 4 months old, the baby doesn't want to sleep all through the night and you're tired, or he or she is fussy in the evening and you're like, oh, will the crying ever stop? And it's stressful because you're tired and you're just like, let me walk and sing some more. What will make you happy? Or, you know, can I get a full night's sleep? And it's stressful. You know, or they're a toddler, they get older. And then they're just like, they're just getting into everything and you're following them all around trying to keep them alive and others alive, you know? And it's just a busy stage of life for that little toddler. Do you know why you have that stress? Because God blessed you, and we know this. He blessed us with the thing we once probably prayed for. God, I'd love the blessing of a child. And he gives us a child, and the child is a blessing that brings some stressing. And then the stressing just changes forms when they get older. And there's still a blessing, but there's still some stressing. And then they become adult kids, adult children. I said that last hour and someone laughed out loud when I said, then there's our adult kids, and someone like started cackling. I'm like, is that funny? I don't know what that's funny for. But anyhow, but you know, and you're like, man, I have stress worrying about them. I'm still stressed about them. You know why? Because you had the blessing of a child that probably at once you prayed for and hoped for and someone else wishes they had. And that blessing, and it is such a blessing. But it does bring stress, doesn't it, mom and dad? Most of our stressing is because of our blessings. Here's one. You say, I'm not a mom or dad. What about your job? You run a business, you're like, oh, my business is driving. It's so much work to own a company. What a blessing. But it does bring stressing, doesn't it? Or you don't own a company, you're just employed. I'm a worker bee, Arlen. I just work a job. And my job has people and frustrations, right? That's why we tell our children when they're young, hey, when you have drama in school with other people or you don't like a teacher, that's just good training for life because you probably have a boss someday that you won't always love. I mean, I won't ask for testimonies of how many of adults always loved your boss. Or maybe you have employees that you don't always get along with. And so this is just training, right, growing up. But here's the thing. If you have a job and as an adult and it stresses you, what a blessing to have a job that provides the pays the bills and provides ends meet because someone else needs that or wants that. I'm just saying that getting older, here's another example, getting older is stressful. My mind says I'm younger than my body says, no, you're not. I try to do things I used to do much easier. And things happen and we lose control and things get trickier. That stress comes because we've had the blessing of living long enough to get old. I wouldn't have that stress if I didn't live long enough to get old. Even when we're young, the living life, most of the stress of this life is because we're alive. It's the blessing of being alive as you get to deal with all the things that life brings. Most of our stressing, fill in your own blank, most of our stressing is because of our blessings. And so I want to give you a statement to take home with you. I want you to remember when you need it most. It goes like this. I'm stressed because I'm blessed. Okay? That's it. I'm stressed because I'm blessed. I want you to look at the person right now. Look at the person sitting next to you. Turn to them and say to them, I'm stressed because I'm blessed. Go ahead. Right? I mean, it's the truth. Some of you are like, let me tell you. Some of you are saying it with a smile. I'm stressed because I'm blessed. Some of you got a tear in the corner of your eye. I'm stressed because I'm blessed. When Michelle and I were young married couple, we took this church in Cedar Lake. This was like we were 25 years old. Not this building, our old location tucked away in no man's land. We were in that building. We're 25 years old, and we were brand new parents. Our son Brett was a little guy. He was born while we were getting that job. And so we're a young couple. I'm a new pastor. Everything's new to us. And one day, in that first year of my ministry, I got a chance to meet a man in our community named Mr. Thornsberry. Mr. Thornsberry was not, he's an older gentleman. He was retired. His health was poorer. He walked with a cane and he was struggling. But Mr. Thornsberry was a brilliant man, very successful in his life. He lived alone. He was very brilliant, but he could not wrap his mind around Christian faith. He was an agnostic. He said, I just don't know if I can believe. I want to believe what you're saying, but I just can't get past my brain. So he didn't consider himself a believer. I would have many conversations with him where he would say to us things like, that sounds good, but I can't buy it. But for the next couple of years, we built a very close friendship with him. I loved hanging out with him. In fact, eventually, by the way, here's the good news. Before he passed away in a couple of years, he received the Lord Jesus Christ as his Savior. It came full circle. But for a long time, it wasn't that way. We'd have some big, interesting talks. But he loved our family. And one day he called me and said, hey, I need to go down to the grocery store. Can you pick me up and bring me to the grocery store here in town, which is now Streck and Vent Hills. But back then it wasn't Streck and Vent Hills. It was Wilco. How many of you remember Wilco? Anybody here? Yeah, Wilco. So he says, can you bring me to Wilco for some groceries? And I said, of course I can. And he said, hey, would you mind bringing Michelle and the little boy, Brett? I want to see them. So what am I going to say to that? So sure, we'll all come. So I got in the car and Michelle gets in the back with baby Brett and we pick up Mr. Thornsberry, gets in the front with me and we drive to Wilco. And as we're driving there, Brett, he's not liking the car seat at that age. He wants to be held, but he's just not happy. We're all hearing about it. We get to the store, we walk inside, and Mr. Thornsberry tells us, I had no idea until we got there, that the reason he wanted to go to the store was to buy us groceries because we're a young family. And I tried to object, but he insisted. So we're sheepishly loading our cart. He's like, you fill that cart or I'll fill it for you. So we filled our cart. And honestly, I'm so thankful. We were 25-year-old kids with a baby. We could use the help. It was helpful. But it was also a little bit embarrassing, but I was grateful. We checked out. We loaded up the car. We're driving him home. Brett was fussy in and out at the store. He's fussy in the back of the car. And we get to his house, and Brett still, he's calmed down a bit, but he's still a little unhappy. And we're just back there a little bit embarrassed that, you know. And Mr. Thornsberry, before he gets out of the car, and I thank him, he pivots and he looks at me. He turns around and he looks at Michelle, looks at Brett's car seat, and he looks at us and he says, enjoy every minute of it. And then he said words that I have never forgotten. He looked at us and said, "You're having the time of your life and you don't even know it." Man, those still get me emotional to this day. He was right, you know. Not that we didn't know it. I think we tried to know it. We were grateful. We were great. I think we had the right outlook. But it's true. Fast forward 26 years, you know, and your kids are mostly grown and gone, and you look back and you say, those were the years. Those were the glory years. That was the prime. All that hustle and bustle and crazy season of life, and it was so wonderful. Those are the stories you tell, the memories you have, the pictures you look at. But boy, they were stressful at times. We're having the time of our lives. You don't even know it. I'm stressed because I'm blessed. Jesus was having a moment where he realizes the truth of that statement, and he's praising God and he's affirming the blessings of his life. But of course, while he's trying to do that, people aren't leaving him alone. He's trying to reset himself. He's trying to reset himself, and people keep pouring in, "Jesus, Jesus, I need help. I need a miracle," you know? So he's got to answer while trying to sort out his own situation here and come to these conclusions. Here comes the crowd. So look what Jesus says to them in verse 28. Then Jesus said, "Stop bothering me. I am weary and unable to handle anything else. I need some rest." Okay, spoiler alert. That's not what Jesus said. I made that up, okay? That's not a real Bible verse, okay? No, but can you relate to that statement? Have you ever wanted to say something like that to somebody? Like, "Stop bothering me. Please, I'm tired. I'm unable to handle." Look, what's that? No, don't do that. But have you ever felt that way before, Kathy? Have you ever sat in a spot in your life where you're like, "Can I just sit in the bathroom without fingers coming underneath the door? Just give me a few minutes of privacy, please. I need some rest. Can the people who work for me stop fighting for 5 minutes with each other so I can do something else?" Right? So what does Jesus say in all actuality? Jesus says in verse 28, then Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Here he is trying to figure out his own rest, and he's like, "Just come to me. And I'll give you rest." Here's why. Because when you come to me, I'll give you rest because I understand, because I have walked in your shoes. I have carried your stresses. I understand. It was a song we sang earlier. "You understand me. You understand me, God." I understand. And you come to me and I'll give you some rest. And then he adds this in verse 29. He says, "Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart. And you will find rest for your souls." Now, I grew up hearing, I've been in church a lot of my life, and I've heard this verse taught and preached from several times through my life or more. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't fully catch the significance of that verse for many years. And that's not because of my teachers or the people who preached it to me. They did a great job. It's not them, it's me. I didn't fully grasp it because I caught part of it, but not the other part. Here's the part I caught, that Jesus was saying, "Come to me if you're burdened. Come to me if you're weary. I'll give you rest, and then I'm going to give you some work to do." You know what a yoke is? A yoke is something you put on oxen so they can go out and plow the field. Jesus is saying, "Come to me for rest, and I'm going to give you some work to do." And that's a good truth, by the way, because you know what most of us need when we're most discouraged and not mentally healthy? We need something to do. Otherwise, we tend to sit down in our own ugly space and spiral. Right? And spiral. The easiest thing to do is lock ourselves off and get more depressed and get more alone, which makes us more depressed, and it just gets worse. And so it's a good truth that sometimes the best way out of that is to find something to do and something to do for others. And Jesus just did that, by the way. Did you notice that Jesus just did that? He had just been upset about people who weren't listening. Then he gave thanks to God and prayed and changed his perspective. And then he said, "Okay, come to me. Let me help somebody else. Let me help somebody else." Because sometimes the best path forward is not just to get a little rest for our souls, but also to get something to do for somebody else, because helping somebody else helps our own mental perspective. And that's the truth I got from this verse, and that's a good truth. But that's not the only truth. It took me more recently to fully appreciate what he was saying. When he said, take my yoke upon you, here's what he meant. A yoke is something you put not on one ox, but on a team of oxen. Because the two oxen together pull that yoke. And of course, they are so much more exponentially powerful yoked together. Jesus was saying, you don't have to do this alone. It's my yoke. Let me put it on you and let's do this together. He's saying, listen, let's pull this thing together. You come to me. And yes, you have things that you're bringing to me, but I have something for you to do. But we're just going to put it all together and we're going to get in the yoke together. And I'm humble. I'm humble and gentle at heart. I'm not a mean driver. I'm not like, mush, oxen, mush. No, I'm in there with you. We're working this together. He says in the next verse, he says, for my yoke is easy to bear and the burden I give you is light. You know why it's light? Because he's doing the heavy pulling is why. He says, if you'll carry your own burdens by yourself, they can crush you. If you'll bring them to me and we'll come together, we'll put it all together, the thing that you're struggling with and the thing I want you to do, and I'll get in the yoke with you and we're going to get this thing done and it's going to be easier because I'm doing it with you. Jesus faced his discouragement by giving thanks to God in prayer and then turning around and affirming to himself that he was stressed because he was blessed. And then he said, everybody else, come to me. And here's the takeaway. This is a takeaway for you today. Whoever is struggling, whoever is discouraged, whoever is feeling like no one notices you or all that you've poured yourself into has not made the difference you hoped it would make and you're just done or you think you're close to it. Jesus says to you, come to me. Find rest. And let's do it together. That's it. Come to me. Find rest, and let's do it together. Now, here's my encouragement to you. I know it's easy when you're frustrated to not run to Jesus, but I beg you today, come to Jesus. And when you come, find out something that you're thankful for and talk about that for a little while. It will humble us and change our perspective and bring gratitude in our hearts that are frustrated. And then remind ourselves that most of our stressing is because of our blessings. And then say, God, let's do it together. You know why do it together is a big deal? Because we can't stop doing it. Let's be honest. This whole idea of coming to Jesus for rest, what kind of rest is that, that you can stop? Most, if you're a young parent, you can't just stop being a parent because you came, I need some rest. Well, baby still needs to cry. Toddler still needs to be chased around. The job that you, the business you run still needs to have problems solved. You still got to go to work the next day, right? Jesus is saying, when you come to me with that load, I will give you soul, I'll give you rest for your soul, and then we're going to do it together. But he's never going to come along and force himself on you. He's like a parent, mom and dad, who sits back and wants to help your child do something. They're like, no, I got this. And you're like, I want to help, but they don't want my help. So I'm just going to sit back and wait for them to say help. And Jesus is like, you can do this by yourself if you want to, but if you come to me, you'll find support, you'll find companionship, you'll find rest for your souls, and then you don't have to do it alone. I am not alone. I am not alone. Let's do it together. Come to Jesus.